Today is St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2006. I am Michael Rodriguez, and I'm here talking with Mark Jakic. This is the Michigan author, the Michigan Writers Series. So I always ask a question about Michigan. Now, I don't know anything about you. Where are you from?
Chicago originally, a bunch of years ago. So just got to Michigan 2004. Took a job at Central Michigan, Central. Mount Pleasant. So I was kind of glad to be back to the Midwest. I've been in lots of places. South a lot, actually, doing schoolwork and such. Mm-hmm. California for the last couple of years right before coming to Michigan.
Where did you do your school? If you did.
There's a bunch. Started Illinois Wesleyan, a little school in Illinois. Then went to Indiana University. Mm-hmm. Did a master's there in West European Studies. Because I didn't do anything with poetry before I was about 26. I hated poems, hated writing. I was a poli sci undergrad major.
No kidding.
Then I went to Brussels and did some work over there at the Parliament, poli sci stuff again. And then I, you know, it just kind of bit me in the rear end, writing, reading, that kind of thing. So then I, more schooling, came back to Louisiana State, started my MFA there.
Wow.
And then I transferred because of this great visiting poet named Mary Leader, but only visiting. So she got a tenure track job at Memphis. So I transferred to Memphis, went to school in Memphis. It goes on, you know, it was one more after that. I finished the MFA at Memphis, and then still, you know, what are you going to do? You don't have a book, you're a poet, you know, you're 30 some years old. Mm-hmm. I then got a fellowship to Florida State. So I finished my PhD in Florida State this spring.
Oh, you haven't finished?
Yeah, I mean, the dissertation's finished the coursework a couple years ago. But
so what is your dissertation now?
It's actually a novel, because it's a creative dissertation. Yeah. So I could have done a collection of poems, but that seemed a little not easy, but I already had a collection. So it seemed like, well, I had this novel
I'm glad
I'd started.
I'm glad you said that, because that's what I did.
Yeah. Oh, you did that, really? Yeah. So I said, well, novel, I'll never write a novel unless I make my dissertation. Yeah. So that's what I did.
Who are you working with at Florida State?
Yeah, Florida State. The poet is James Kimbrell, The Gatehouse Heaven with Sarah Band. That was his book. Came out '97. He's the poet, and then the fiction writers are Mark Weingartner, the guy who did the last Godfather book, just came out.
Oh, wow! Yeah.
His character, and then Robert Owen Butler, who won the Pulitzer back in '93 for A Good Scent from a Green Mountain, I think it's called.
All guys.
Yeah, all these men, you know. Mary Leader was my mentor as a poet, but at Florida State, there just weren't that many, you know, female writers, and I didn't really have any classes with them, so it was a nice balance, though, I guess, because I didn't have really a poet who was a male.
You must have studied poetry quite a bit down there, though.
Yeah, I think mainly...
Well, I guess the better question is, so you were doing something else completely. How did this transformation, what bit you?
Right. I think just being in Brussels kind of self-imposed exile a little bit. I'd studied in Vienna as an undergrad, so when I got back to the States after that, I graduated college, and then, you know, there were no jobs, like 92. Right. And so my whole goal was to get back to Europe, so I found a way finally. I was working in the European Parliament, and it was great. You know, my schooling was all about poli sci, and I had done computers on the side, and so I was working on this telecom project. And I was interested in it, but I didn't have a lot of friends, so I started reading books. Mm. I would just go to the English bookstore down the street from my house in Brussels, and I started reading poetry first because it was short, you know. I never liked to read before that, so poems seemed easy, and I could, you know, digest a poem page or two. So I started reading Eastern European poets mainly. I had dated this girl from half Bulgarian, half Polish, and she was really into books, so she got me interested in some books. And then on my own, I kind of bumped into people like Charlie Simic and the kind of, you know, he's an emigre from Belgrade, I mean, but his whole heritage is kind of Eastern European, Russian, the Balkans. So I started reading that stuff first. I didn't know who Walt Whitman was or Emily Dickinson until I was about 27.
Yeah.
I came back to the States.
Yeah.
But I... It's kind of, you know, on my free time, I just started getting obsessed with reading. Mm. And I kept this journal, which was, you know, just a journal, everyday thing. And then I started writing really bad poems in it, awful stuff, you know, middle school.
You gotta start somewhere.
It was terrible. Somehow with that, I, you know, came up with some poems out of that, and that's what got me into Louisiana State. But I don't think they accepted me because of the poems. I think they accepted me because, oh, this guy's coming from Europe, he's
right.
got a funny last name, that kind of thing.
You were probably an interesting, non-traditional student to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why they took you.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the work, I'll tell you that.
Well, it worked out well.
But it worked out for me, I'll tell you that.
So you are a real Midwesterner. The question that I originally asked, we can actually get back to, you know, this is the Michigan Writers Series. So I ask, you know, how does Michigan inform or...
Yeah.
What does Michigan have to do with it, is the question.
Yeah, probably nothing with my writing.
Yeah.
And even, you know, even Brussels, when I live in the South, my poems don't really come directly out of my life because I've never really understood, and this is probably because I came to poems late. I don't really understand. I had this report, for example, on Dover Beach when I was in high school, and I didn't understand why I had to write this paper about this poem about the beach. In the first place, I didn't understand why this guy wanted to write about the beach and not just go to the beach, right? And I didn't understand that it was about, you know, about the language and not about the beach. I still come to that. When I read a poem and it's very realistic, that's fine, but there are probably other mediums, including just real lived life, that do it better than a poem about an ER, you know, scene. Well, if I really want to be moved, I'm going to watch ER. Mm-hmm. You know, plus there's like, you know, good looking people on it who are, you know, that can do double duty, and I can't see that in a poem. My point is, I guess I write from kind of just knocking up phrases together, and definitely at first I have no idea where it's going to go. But I end up saying something that's, you know, inside me in the end anyway, because I can't escape myself. Meaning, my first book was pretty much all wounded love poems. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't necessarily set out writing a bunch of poems about wounded love or about vegetables and fruits. There's lots of fruits and vegetables in the poems. And I definitely didn't set out to write those. But by just knocking interesting phrases together or based on their sound or some, you know, riff off a cliche or something, I started building the poems. So
you start with language.
Definitely start with language. So place sometimes gets involved. Mm. In my second book, there's a lot of references to San Francisco because I lived in there for a few years, and it did have an influence on me kind of as a place, but I didn't set out trying to write about San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But it's up there, you know, my conscience, I'd say.
So this is, I'm not sure how to ask this without leading the question.
Sure.
But it sounds more a life of the mind than it is a life of the body.
Yeah, I've been accused of that, it's true.
Yeah.
Very cerebral, dense poems. And yet I guess what I'm trying to escape the two, because there's a lot of kind of erotic things that happen with these fruits and vegetables in the poems, for example. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of sensual qualities to it, but they're not necessarily the ones that immediately come to mind.
And even if you don't use the first person personal pronoun, that doesn't mean you're not writing about yourself.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, or that doesn't mean you're not writing about something that has emotional impact and grip, right? I mean, there's lots of characters in my first book, kind of messed up little superheroes, and there's lots of, you know, emotional things happening with these characters. They're just not necessarily me.
Right. So we were talking earlier about the cover of the book, the cover of the new book, The Making of Collateral Beauty. There's obviously an intersection of between art and poetry here, and that seems rather intentional. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the question. Is that intentional? Is that?
Yeah, it's good. It's a good question. A fair question, because both the books have kind of interesting covers. The first one has all these little messed up superheroes, like I said. One with, for example, a guy in a big yellow. What do you call that? Elvis bodysuit. And he's got a logo on his chest.
It's like a Mexican wrestling suit.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is, exactly. And the logo, though, is, you know, this little island with a little palm tree in the middle of it, right? So, you know, those intriguing little characters. And the other cover, The Making of Collateral Beauty, has this guy with a hoe, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then he's starting to strike that on the ground. And off the back of him are kind of exploding these butterflies and things. And these are both pretty useful to... ways to get into the book, because I really do love the visual arts, and I always have, paintings, especially, photography less so as I get older, but painting especially.
And you found the artwork that is on the Collateral Beauty.
Yeah. And in both, I think I've written poems based off of paintings, and images, photographs. And
it's almost a genre of poetry.
It really is. I mean, ekphrasis is like the fancy word people talk about, you know, writing off of images. And the key is always, though, you know, not having, you don't have to have the image to get something that, you know, the poem can stand on its own. That's right. Not always easy, but my goal isn't to, just like real life, my goal isn't to reproduce the painting in words. Some people do that. That's fine. That's just not my goal. My goal is to perhaps be riffing off of the image, or taking one character in the image and having it, you know, speak to the creator, perhaps.
Well, we're talking about the difference between art and poetry then, which is you cannot reproduce artwork with words.
Right.
It's visual.
In the same way you can't reproduce life in words.
Right.
I'm not saying you shouldn't try, or that there's not a relationship. Of course there's a relationship, but if your goal is, you know, mimesis, you know, true representation, I think, you know, you're kind of, you know, shot from the first. I mean, there's no sense in doing that. Just actually live the life or paint the picture instead, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's about the words.
One of the questions I always ask too is about teaching. Is teaching in some way, how does that work with the writing? Does that inform your writing? Mm-hmm. Is it something that goes as a dialogue? You know, how does that work out?
That's a good question, because that's, you know, pretty much the only way poets make a living, unless they're, you know, part of the Merrill family, or I like Jimmy Merrill a lot too, by the way. I was almost related to him. In any case, I'll say that for some other time. But yeah, poets say you have to teach if you want to, you know, pay the bills. And I like teaching a lot, in fact, because it's the one place that I do get the social interaction, because writing a poem is a very solitary. You're in the closet just by yourself. Maybe the cats are around, but that's all you do is you and the page. And I love that, that recluse behavior. But then again, I need to have the balance. And sometimes just the teaching gives me that social interaction. That's really useful just to mentally...
Right.
For me.
So it's an outlet. It's not necessarily something that works itself into...
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've written some poems. Yeah.
Your sense of aesthetics.
Well, let's put it this way. I encourage my students to borrow and steal from each other and other poets and whatever. Non-books of poetry. We often bring in car manuals or guides to North American birds or whatever. And I want them to understand, listen, language is all around you.
Right.
Steal from these things, borrow from these things, part of the deal. And so sometimes in class, I got my little notebook, and I'll, you know, someone will say something kind of interesting just the other day, and I'll be like, oh, wait, I got to take that down. And I think I'm kidding with them, but I'm actually writing down these phrases, and I may use some of them. So
they don't mind that you're stealing their
words? No, because, you know, I encourage them to steal from me too, you know?
Yeah.
And they start to really, you know, appreciate that after a while. At first they're a little shocked, and they're like, well, yeah. Mm. Isn't that how, you know, Shakespeare worked? I mean... Mm. He didn't invent Hamlet. Mm. That story was around before he, you know, started writing about Hamlet.
Yeah. Shakespeare stole all of his material, too.
Yeah. I mean, he did fabulous things with it, right?
Yeah.
Most underrated poet in English, probably. Mm. But yeah, it's there.
Excellent.
Be repeated.
That's great. Do you want to... Anything else you want to say? I mean, we're literally running out of time.
Right.
That's cool.
I don't think so, but thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, all right, we'll go back and we'll say thank you very much for coming.